Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
This is indeed the Get European Football show on Love Sport with the guys from Get Football, Adam White and Jeremy Smith. Plenty coming up in tonight's show. Quite an eventful opening weekend it has been across Europe, starting with La Liga. Barcelona's loss to Athletic Bilbao on that opening night in La Liga. Aritz Aduriz with an absolute worldie of a goal there for Athletic Bilbao. Real Madrid obviously winning against Celta Vigo, and Gareth Bale starting in that game. Luka Modric getting a red card, but Bale starting and getting around 75 minutes. So quite a staggering swing in that narrative there. We're going to be talking PSG and their shock defeat at Rennes, AC Milan ahead of the new Serie A season and the opening Bundesliga weekend. A quick bit of admin, it is Wolves 0, Manchester United 1 in the Premier League. The absolute unit that is Adama Traore has just come onto the pitch in place of Matt Doherty, so that's an attacking change for them. But we are streaming on YouTube as well, so if you want to check us out, Adam and Jeremy will be live on the cam coming up right now. Just search Get European Football Show on YouTube. Right, over to the guys.
Yes, you're absolutely right, Matt. It was an absolutely packed weekend of European football. Three leagues of four or five, I suppose, now, if you include the Premier League, underway. Serie A starts next weekend. A number of big results in each league. A really exciting opening weekend in the Bundesliga and in La Liga, which we're going to talk about extensively over the course of the show. But I thought we'd start, Joe, with a look back at the weekend and start with your club, Metz, and Monaco's second successive 3-0 loss. Were they that bad? Were they does it as bad as it sounds?
It really was. I mean, I'm not sure that there's going to be too many weeks this season where Metz headline, but probably it's deserved this week. And it was only 2-3 years ago, I think it was Monaco's title-winning season, where they won 7-0 at Metz. And frankly, Metz had enough chances that they could easily have sort of matched that result and really avenged that defeat. A penalty and a couple of really good goals, goal line clearance, two superb saves late on from Leconte, a missed sitter from Belaya as well. Metz couldn't have wished for it to be more comfortable. They were helped again, or Monaco were hindered again, by another harsh red card for the second consecutive week. But frankly, this Monaco team, obviously there's still 2-3 weeks of the transfer window left and they'll be looking to bring people in, but they look awful on and off the pitch. And the rumours today are that they were close to, They seem to be close to bringing in Icardi. His wife has denied that he's going to Monaco. But either way, I think, you know, as much as they probably need a striker, especially if Falcao goes, despite Ben Yedder arriving, that's the least of their problems. I mean, the defence and midfield, as bad as they are, if they don't bring people in there, the strikers are never going to get the ball anyway. It's kind of a moot point.
Do you think Metz deserve some credit, though? Habib Diallo, 26 goals in Ligue 1 last season, got a couple. Looked dangerous, as he did in the first game as well. And you managed to keep a lot of the team that got you promoted, which is unusual for a promoted team. Often there's a lot of turnover at some of those clubs. And I reckon that Metz should be okay this season, right? It's a positive sign. I expect them to be, of the three promoted sides, they're the most likely to stay up, I think.
They're such a yo-yo team that they get to kind of test out all the different ways of staying up or trying to stay up. So one time they just kept all the youngsters that had brought them up two divisions in 2 straight years. Another time they went with more experience with players like Florent Malouda, which didn't work out at all. And I think this year they've got quite a nice balance. They've got a couple of relatively inexperienced players, but players who've come from bigger clubs. Like they've got Angbon, who was there last year on loan, but they've signed permanently from Chelsea. They've got Maiga from Saint-Etienne. So they've got a really strong midfield led by Coad, who's, I think, a sort of real unsung hero in general league out terms, but really a fantastic player and captain for Metz. And as you said, I think the only thing that Metz fans are quite worried about was whether they've got a real clinical striker. And despite the 26 goals last year, I think there were quite a few Metz fans who thought, is Diallo really league rank quality? A lot of the goals last year were penalties in the end. But certainly first two matches, he's looked pretty much clinical. He had one chance against Strasbourg, put it away really well. A couple of goals this week, but leading the line well as well, and only a really superb Leconte save late on denied him a hat-trick.
How was Wissam Ben Yedder at the other end? His debut for Monaco after that big move. Looks like Falcao's on his way. An interesting debut. He didn't last too long. He sort of lasted about an hour, didn't he?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, like I said, he's first of all, he's, I don't think he's entirely match fit. He's obviously not used to playing with his new teammates that much at the moment. But again, it's kind of irrelevant how the strikers are playing. If the defence and midfield are so bad that they're not seeing any of the ball, then it doesn't matter how good Ben Yedder is in theory. He's not going to be able to show anything on the pitch. There are a couple of flashes. Onyekuru as well, who's just signed from Everton. He looked quite bright and maybe should have got a penalty. I'm slightly biased. I thought it was a dive, but yeah, there's potential there. But as I said, that's not the problem.
Onyekuru should be a good signing, I think. I think he was at Anderlecht. He was very good at my Belgian football watching friends liked him a lot in the Belgium league. So he could be a really interesting signing. And they're slowly getting somewhere, Monaco. But as you said, they looked really, pretty bad in that game. And for the second week in a row, they've been beaten 3-0. OK, they've had a man sent off in both games, but it really does look quite worrying for them. Just looking down the rest of the results, we're going to talk a lot about PSG with Jonathan Johnson later on in the show there. 2-1 defeat at Rennes last night was a bit of a shock, but a very interesting game. A lot of talking points on that. But on Friday night, we're going to talk about this too later on, but a quick word about Lyon. Angers 6-0 to Lyon. They look so slick, don't they?
They look fantastic Friday night, and not that Angers are the greatest opposition, but the one thing that they are usually is very well organised, solid defensively, and for them to be put to the sword like that, I think was a sort of real statement by Lyon. It was, and I think more than even the result, it was the fact that Aouar, who's sort of one of the sort of great young players of Europe, but actually had a really disappointing season last season, looked fantastic. Memphis Depay was actually sprinting, pressing, sort of harrying the Angers players when they had the ball. You never see that kind of thing. Yeah. So I think as we discussed in previous weeks, Juninho, in the light of the poor friendly results, was sort of worried about the continued lack of team spirit from the last couple of years. But certainly on the basis of the first two matches, it looks like there aren't any problems there, or he and Silvinho are really dealing with them well at the moment. And yeah, they've started like a train.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's a brilliant PR move from Aulas, the president at Lyon, because he's taken sort of the fan ire away from himself and the club in general, which built up to quite a toxic level under Genesio last season. A lot of that was obviously directed at Bruno Genesio, the manager. But now he's left. Juninho is such a club legend, so there's sort of this so much goodwill, he's got so much capital on behalf of the fans, that there's such a wave of positivity around the club. And although this might not work out in the long term, and there's still a long way to go, Savino's done a really good job so far. They're going to get a lot more leeway and a lot more time from that fan base given just by Juninho being there. So it's a really interesting move, especially if Aulas takes a step back, because he's managed the club really, really well over the past, what, 30 years he's been there, more than 30 years he's been in and around the club.
Around that, yeah.
Which, you know, they don't have the money that PSG have, and they won 7 titles in a row, and not even PSG have managed that. So amazing management of the club. So hopefully it'll sort of coalesce between him and Juninho, and they'll work out something. But it's a really good, it's an astute move, I think, overall. Moving on to the Bundesliga, Friday night Bayern Munich drew 2-2 with Hertha Berlin. They're pretty lucky to get a draw in that game. We're going to talk about that later on. But we were talking about Leipzig a little bit before we came on. They played away at Union Berlin, promoted side from Berlin, from East Berlin. I think they're the first team from East Berlin to be in the Bundesliga since the fall of the Berlin Wall, which is interesting. And they're a really interesting club. But Leipzig tore them apart on Sunday afternoon, 3-0 up by half time. Werner's finish for the third was actually fantastic, absolutely drilled it in. It was brilliant. Marcel Sabitzer looked absolutely fantastic in midfield, scored the second. And we think they could win the league. We were talking about it before we came on. I'm not going to say they're favourites, that's a bit rash, but they're in contention.
I saw a good stat that this weekend is, I don't know if it's the reigning champions or the four particular teams, but PSG, Bayern Munich, Man City and Barcelona all failed to win. It's the first time that they've all failed to win the same weekend since, I think, April 2014, something like that. And it does feel that possibly, Man City, I don't think that's going to be the case, but for the other three, that they are sort of all shaky in different ways. And I think that I'm not going to go so far as to say that there could be another Leicester, but certainly I think in at least one of those leagues, I think there's going to be certainly a change of champion. And Bayern are certainly one of those who are sort of going through a transition period. I think they've lost 2-3 important players in the close season, and I think that Leipzig are one of the teams who could capitalise. We spoke, I think, last week about how obviously Nagelsmann's made this big brave move, and it's a real sort of, not a test, but you know, he's done. There's been so many cases where a coach has done brilliantly at one club, and it turns out that there was just some kind of sort of alchemy when they were at that club, but moved somewhere else and they struggled. Nagelsmann, obviously a very young coach, very talented coach, but all eyes are on him to see if he can transfer that from Hoffenheim to Leipzig. And certainly the way they played the other at the weekend, okay, not necessarily the strongest opposition, but the way they tore them apart. You've got Nkunku as well scoring with his first touch in the Bundesliga. Certainly it's a statement, I think, and it's something for Bayern especially, and also Dortmund to be aware of.
For sure. The passing was just so quick, and they moved the ball so well around midfield, and they just couldn't keep up Union Berlin. I mean, I think they might do okay this season. They might be a little bit light on Bundesliga quality, but they'll be good at home overall, and I think they have a chance of staying up. But Leipzig were just on another level. It was very impressive. Dortmund got off to a really good start, beat Augsburg 5-1. They were 1-0 down inside 30 seconds. Florian Niedermayer nipped in to give Augsburg the lead, but Paco Alcacer equalises in sort of 2 minutes, and they never really looked back. Again, they looked really strong as well, but in a different way to Leipzig, in that there was always this impression that perhaps there were other gears. You know, there are gears above the one they were playing in, and they won that game 5-1. Augsburg aren't the strongest. They're going to struggle this season. But I think between those two teams, Bayern have got a real issue. And Augsburg has got 20 in 27 games, I think, which is quite impressive. I know that we live in an era where goal records are sort of not overblown, but they're more impressive than that. But that's still a really good run of goals. And Julian Brandt didn't start, but came off the bench and scored a really nice fifth. Royce and Sancho, another season together, they look like they've got a really good understanding. And a 5-1 win to open with not really playing your best football was very impressive.
I think Dortmund have got several match winners in their team, and we spoke about how in the sort of Community Shield, German version, Super Cup. Sancho didn't have a great game, but still came up with a brilliant goal and assist. I think they've got several players like that, that the team doesn't necessarily need to be playing that well, and there's enough players there who could pop up with something to change the game. I'm not saying that was the case here. A 5-1 win was comprehensive, but I think that's why they're always going to be dangerous. Even if they're not having the greatest day sort of on a team basis, that someone is capable of coming out with some magic to turn the game. My only concern with Dortmund is, as I said before, I just think Lucien Favre is so intense and works his team so hard, sort of mentally and physically, that it's just a question of whether it can really last throughout the whole season. And I think that was the problem last year when they fell a bit short, but there's no doubt they're going to be sort of there or thereabouts.
It's definitely been a problem in previous years as well, but I think he's a really good coach, so I think it definitely could coalesce in a short space of time, you know, over the course of the season. Very quickly before we move on, how good was that Adair's goal?
Fantastic. Yeah. I joked beforehand that he shinned it. He didn't shin it at all. It was just a superb finish and first touch as well, just unbelievable. And you know, Barcelona struggled during the match anyway. Probably had it stayed 0-0, people would have said that was disappointing. But to come away with a 1-0 defeat like that, I mean, I'm sure there's not many neutrals who are that bothered, especially a 38-year-old coming off the bench and a finish like that. Fantastic.
For sure. Yeah, a 38-year-old. His final season is this for Adair's? What a player he's been over the years. Right, coming up, more La Liga after this. Love Sport. This is the Get European Football Show on Love Sport Radio with the guys from Get Football, Adam White and Jeremy Smith. We are on YouTube. Just search Get European Football Show on YouTube. And if you want to join the debate, 0208 7020 558. You can WhatsApp us on that number as well and get us on Twitter at Love Sport Radio. Adam, we're going to go to La Liga next.
We are. We mentioned that Adair's goal before the break. And we'll be talking about the opening weekend of the La Liga season. And to join us in that discussion is Robbie Dunn of AS English. Hi there, Robbie.
Hey, how are you doing, fellas?
Very good, thanks, mate. I just asked Jeremy before the break, how good was that Adair's goal? I'm going to ask you the same question. How good was that Adair's goal?
Oh, it's an absolute beauty. Yeah, given the fact, I think the circumstances as well, a real tense nil-all draw with Barcelona. He had just announced he was going to retire at the end of the season. He sprung from the bench last, not exactly the last minute, but last couple of minutes, and he just struck it just beautifully into the bottom corner, and that's how it stayed. It was, the first time Barcelona have lost in the opening game of the season in a good few years. So, it was a massive goal for him and a perfect way to start the season for him.
I thought Athletic's goalkeeper had a good game, but otherwise Barcelona struggled to break Bilbao down. Obviously, that there's been talk the last couple of years of a little bit too much Messi dependency. Do you think that that's what was highlighted by this game, or just it was just one of those matches?
Yeah, I think definitely it does. I mean, I think we've seen the dependency that they have on Messi over the last couple of years, but just the whole thing is so new and so. I'm not sure if you guys have seen you're online at the moment or on air, I should say. But Ousmane Dembele is out now for 5 weeks. Luis Suarez, who has been struggled with a knee injury last season, he's out now for 4 weeks. Lionel Messi didn't train today, so it looks like he's going to be back for Betis, but he still hasn't been cleared to train. Griezmann is still kind of trying to integrate himself into the team and figure out what his role is. And we saw how Coutinho struggled on that left-hand side there, obviously, in the last 2 years. Frenkie de Jong is there. Sergio Busquets isn't fit enough to start yet. It's also new. We're not actually sure what to expect of this Barcelona team. I mean, they're signing some really good players in the likes of Griezmann and de Jong, but where do they fit? How do they integrate into the team? As we know, Barcelona's a fairly professional, closed group of a dressing room. There's been Messi and Piqué have been there for years. It's a fairly closed off group, so it's hard to kind of break into that. So it depends on how Griezmann, De Jong and the likes integrate themselves into the team.
Yeah, it was really interesting to watch that game because Griezmann's role was something that sort of stuck out to me quite a bit. And he was sort of on that left-hand side, which you mentioned. Coutinho really struggled there last season. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on, based on that also it's just one game, what do you see as Coutinho's role? What did it tell us about how Coutinho is going to be used this season? Griezmann, sorry. How Griezmann's going to be used over the course of the season? And did you think he had a good start? I thought he was quite quiet overall.
Yeah, oh yeah, he was, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, he played it, like, given the fact that he's I guess this is the issue with Barcelona, they're trying to improve, but and they can only bring in world-class players to improve. So Griezmann, he was the main man for Simeone in a fairly blunt attack, so it was kind of, the chances that they did get were basically came from Griezmann creating them, basically. So, like, with Suarez gone from the preseason, he played as a number nine, and I would imagine that that's where his best position is in this team. He never really played on the left too much at Atletico. He's more on the right, kind of cutting inside. Luis Suarez doesn't look overly fit at the moment. Obviously, he's just coming back from his summer on the Copa America. He was a little bit late back training. He's not getting any younger. But I'd imagine if they can maybe get Neymar, obviously Dembele's out now, but I would imagine he's going to take Suarez's place sooner rather than later. And Suarez has admitted that. He said that a couple of months ago before Griezmann was signed. He said, it makes sense that they're already looking for my successor. Like, he kind of admits that he's slowing down. He's had injury issues. He's a kind of heavy set kind of a fellow anyway. So he's going to probably slow down quicker than a fast or a more nimble player. So, yeah, I'd see him as a number nine. But where does Suarez go then, and is he going to be happy to sit on the bench? I mean, I'm not quite sure.
You mentioned the N-word there. You beat us to it. But certainly after that result, and as you said, with question marks over some of the more forward players, where does the whole Neymar to Barcelona thing stand? Is it something Barcelona want, and is it something that they can do, that they can complete?
Yeah, I guess it is. I mean, Real Madrid have been mentioned as a potential destination. I've seen Juventus being linked just recently, and I'm not entirely sure how serious they are about it. I think this is all just a one big bluff by both sides, and they're just trying to get down to the nub of it here. What are Barcelona willing to give up to get Neymar? How serious are they? Like, are they willing to part with, we'll say, Semedo, Rakitic, and 100 million? Will that do it? Will that be enough then for PSG? PSG are going to hold tight. They have him for 3 years. And at the end of the day, they are a club that have enough money to be able to sit. And if they want to put him in the stands just to make a statement here, they can do it. And they're just trying to wait to see what exactly they can get out of Barcelona. And if their offer is going to be good enough, Barcelona, after with the Dembele injury, with Griezmann, with Suarez injured, with Messi wanting Neymar back, they need him. They need this player to make the difference in the Champions League. Regardless of Coutinho's gone now. He was a failure, another failure. Ousmane Dembele is on that path now, due to injuries and due to a lack of consistency. But I know that a lot of Barcelona fans won't like to hear it, but Dembele is on the path to being a failure at Barcelona, and they need Neymar. I know he's got risks with injury, and it's not a risk-free signing, but they know he can play with Messi and Suarez. They know he likes Barcelona. He knows the Camp Nou. And if he can stay fit, he can be a success there. I think they need him if they want to win this Champions League. And that is their holy grail. That is their modus operandi now. They're going for that. And it looks like they're going to be willing to do anything to get it.
It really does feel that way. It really feels that their transfer policy is geared almost entirely towards winning the Champions League. It's clear that, you know, Real Madrid might be the best team in Europe over the last 5 years, winning so many European Cups, but Barcelona are the best team in Spain. They've won 8 of the last 11 La Liga titles. So, you know, the Griezmann and Neymar on his way back, potentially, it feels like they're sort of screwing up just for the Champions League and prioritising that almost entirely. Just looking at the rest of the league very quickly before we move on, I wanted to get your thoughts on Real Madrid and particularly Gareth Bale, because there was a huge U-turn from Zinedine Zidane this week. What was the situation with Zidane and Bale? And Bale started and played pretty well, got a good assist. What's the situation there?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure. I mean, and I personally thought that there was no way back. Mm. Zidane came out and said it would be better off if he was to go at this point. But it must be said that was just when the deal was practically done. That China deal was practically done. And what Zidane was trying to say was, let's get this over and done with here. I don't think he meant it's better off. It's better if Bale just leaves. I don't think he meant it like that per se. What he meant was, it's better to just get it done now at this stage. But I mean, like, at the end of the day, I think Zinedine Zidane, these guys are serial winners. If Gareth Bale can do a job for him on the pitch, Zinedine Zidane, I'm sure, is willing to let bygones be bygones up to a point. I mean, it's not like they're going to be going out for dinner in the city centre anytime soon or anything. But I think once Bale can stay fit and can offer something, he's gonna start in that team. He's better than the options they have there. If you can team Hazard and Bale up on the left and right hand side of Real Madrid's attack with Benzema in the middle, kind of facilitating things, I mean, that's a world class trident. And Real Madrid would definitely benefit from that, given the fact that Vinicius, they're not really sure what's happening with him. Kubo's obviously gone down to Castilla. Rodrigo hasn't really settled entirely well, and these are young guys as well. Gareth Bale, when fit, is a top 15 player in the world, the top 20 player in the world. So if Zidane has said he's going to stay, he's accepted he's going to stay now, because Bale was kind of dug his heels in, and listen, things change at Real Madrid so quickly. A couple of losses here or there, and Zidane could be seeing the door himself, and Bale is off to a fresh start. So it's kind of hard to tell, but it looks like everything's rosy in that garden at the moment too.
Yeah, fantastic stuff, Robbie Dunn. Brilliant insight, as always, from As English. Thank you very much.
No worries, guys.
Griezmann, we were talking about him a little bit before we came on, and you're a huge fan of his. Where would you play him? If you're Ernesto Valverde, where does Griezmann play?
Pretty much anywhere except on the left wing. I genuinely think he's one of the most complete players in world football right now. I think he can play as a centre forward, he can play off the right, he can play as a number 10. I think he could even play sort of further back as an Iniesta or even a Xabi. I think he can do it all. But just having him standing on the left touchline is negating most of his talent. Okay, one of his talents, to be fair, is his defensive work, which Simeone got the got out of him. But you know, to focus on that bit and sort of nullify his attacking threat is crazy. I think possibly the versatility might work against him in that he'll sort of, as these Barcelona players have injuries or whatever, he might be the one to move around. But it does make sense that as Suarez ages a bit, as he sort of suffers with more niggles, that Griezmann would be the man to sort of replace him as the centre forward. But I think sort of week in, week out, I'd rather see him kind of making one position his own. I think it would help him to settle within the team. But either way, I think he's got the quality that he should come good and certainly be a big plus for Barca.
For sure. Very finally on the La Liga weekend, Kevin Gamero is a player that I think is really interesting. He was a brilliant finisher in Liga for Lorient. He's been in Spain for a long time, 32 now, at Valencia, and absolutely skied an injury time penalty, only for Real Sociedad to go at the other end and get their own 101st minute penalty, I think, which Mikel Oyarzabal scored. What are your thoughts on Gamero briefly? Do you still see him as a viable option in La Liga? Should he be starting Valencia, or are you hoping to see him back in France anytime soon?
I think he's still got a very good goal-scoring record wherever he goes. I mean, he gave an interview, I think, during the summer about how when he first arrived at Valencia, he struggled a bit. The fans were against him, and it took a while for him to settle and sort of get the fans behind him. So, in a way, this, you know, scoring a good centre-forwards finish early on, was a great start for him, and then misses a late penalty. You think, oh, it doesn't matter. It was, you know, it just would have been icing on the cake. And as you said, in the end, it cost the team 2 points. So I hope it doesn't sort of turn the fans back against him or get his head down. I think if he came back to Liga, I think he'd be another great addition, because I think he's still a quality striker. And possibly throughout his career, he hasn't necessarily had the credit he's deserved for just being a consistent goal scorer.
Yeah, that is half an hour down. Good stuff, chaps. About an hour to go on the Get European Football Show on Love Sport.
Love Sport.
This is the Get European Football Show on Love Sport with the guys from Get Football, Adam White and Jeremy Smith. We are going to move to the Bundesliga next. Bayern Munich starting their campaign with a draw.
First. Yeah, they did. Yeah, it was an odd game. First half they dominated, but ended up behind. And then they were actually pretty lucky to get back into it, I thought. Pretty questionable VAR penalty was given against Mirko Gruitch from Hertha Berlin, who actually scored the goal that made it 2-1. A little tangle with Robert Lewandowski off the ball, but in the penalty area, even though the ball was nowhere near either of them, the penalty was given. And I don't know whether it was a foul but it seemed a rather rash action from him, and a harsh decision from VAR. But an interesting start for Bayern Munich. And to discuss Bayern's opening to the Bundesliga campaign is Florian Plattenberg from Sport One. Hi there, Florian.
Hi, nice to hear you.
I really wanted to get your thoughts on this Bayern performance first of all. What did we learn from Bayern's opening game against Hertha?
Well, first of all, we could have seen that this season will be very exciting. We have seen a very good first match with Bayern against Berlin. We have seen a Bayern Munich team on which you could have seen the problems they have with their small squad by that time, and by being perfect with their system. They played a 4-3-3 system actually, and it's more the favorite system of the coach and not the favorite system of the players. And we have seen the days after that match with Dortmund, with Leipzig, with Leverkusen, that Bayern Munich will have strong competitors this year.
To what extent, we've got two more goals for Lewandowski, to what extent is he sort of covering up what actually is not a great team this season?
Well, what is his position right now in the team, or
the goals he's scoring, are they sort of hiding what is, are they, is he Bayern getting away with poor performances because of the goals that he's scoring?
Well, Lewandowski is he's one of the most important players of the squad, and he's very ambitious, and he's one of the players who said, okay, we need new players, and this is also a detail which is important for me by regarding if I what about my contract. So he wants to extend his contract until 2 more years. He wants to make one big contract in his life. So he's very ambitious, and you have seen that he's really important for the team, but the problem is that you only have one forward with him and you have no Lewandowski backup. So if he will be injured one day, then Bayern Munich has a really big problem.
Yeah, for sure. You mentioned the Lewandowski sort of required more reinforcements there. And that's taken a little while for those players to come in. I mean, there was a good start to the transfer window with Lucas Hernandez and Benjamin Pavard coming in, but attacking reinforcements have taken a long time to come. And we've seen Philippe Coutinho and Ivan Perisic come in the last few days. What's their role going to be? And is there some excitement around those two players, or are they seen as sort of players that will interchange with Gnabry and others on the wing?
No, absolutely. I have been there today on the presentation of Coutinho, and I have seen the faces, and I was also asking about the plans. I was asking Salihamidzic and I was asking Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, what are their plans with Coutinho? And you could feel that they're very proud of that transfer. And we have also spoken to Lewandowski on Friday, and we have spoken with him about Coutinho. And he says, this is exactly the players I recommended. This is exactly the players we need. They don't need time to improve us. They improve us from the first day on. And this is something what he has told us journalists on the US trip a few weeks ago very, very clearly. And he was one of the players who really said, we need new players and we need those players who help us from the first day on. We need no talents. We need players who could make us better and players which we could win the Champions League. And Coutinho is a player like this. Ivan Perisic is a good transfer. I'm not quite sure if Bayern Munich would have bought him if Leroy Sané wouldn't have injured. And with Benjamin Pavard, you have a player from France. With Lucas Hernandez, you have a player who's fit right now after his injury. And he's a player who could make you better in the defense. So I think the squad right now is there's a high quality right now. And I think a player like Lewandowski, also a player like Joshua Kimmich, also a player like Manuel Neuer, the captain, I think they are proud right now and they are really looking forward to play with these guys.
Well, Bayern were drawing. Dortmund and Leipzig both had emphatic wins. Leverkusen had a good comeback win. Who do you see as Bayern's main contenders or threats to the Bundesliga title this year?
First of all, Dortmund. Dortmund has a very, very exciting squad right now with talented players like Hazard, like Brandt. But they made one important transfer, and this is Mats Hummels. Mats Hummels, he came from Munich and he has got this spirit to say, no, we want to win the champions. We want to win the Bundesliga. And if maybe there's a 19 or 20 years old guy who's shy or who's not secure about what can I say and how offensive, what could be, how offensive can I be? So Mats Hummels is a player who can say, no, we have that pride to say we won the Bundesliga. So Dortmund is really, really ambitious with the transfers. And I think Leverkusen is a team which plays around, plays three or four because they have a good coach. He's playing very offensive, Peter Bosch. And they could keep Kai Havertz. Kai Havertz is one of the biggest talents in the world right now. I think that he will move to Munich next year, but now they could keep him in the squad, and that's really important for Bayer Leverkusen. And I'm really looking forward about what Leipzig is doing, because they have a coach with Julian Nagelsmann, who's also very offensive, who's very good in dealing with the media, who has a good connection to the young players. And I think these four teams, they will handle the Bundesliga right now.
I think they're really four really interesting clubs, all relatively evenly matched as well. I was just wondering if you thought there are any gaps in any of those four teams, any of their first 11s that perhaps might be filled between now and the end of the transfer window. Do you expect Bayern or Dortmund to continue to strengthen their squad between now and the end of August, or are they pretty much set, do you think?
If they buy new players, or... Yeah, it's difficult to understand.
Do you think they might sign anyone else between now and the end of the transfer window?
Well, it's a really good question. I think Dortmund has stopped their transfer plans right now. They have a big squad, and maybe they sell one or two players more. And Hasan Salihamidžić said today that we will keep our eyes on until the end of the transfer window. So the end of the transfer window is in the very beginning of September. And in the last couple of days, we had that rumors about Mario Mandzukic. We knew that Niko Kovac has suggested this player, the Croatian forward from Juventus Turin, because he wants to have a backup to Robert Lewandowski, and he knows about the mentality of Mario Mandzukic. But actually, or right now, the bosses said, no, Mandzukic is not a topic any longer. But maybe, I think that maybe they buy a backup for Robert Lewandowski, but I think they will not do anything like big transfers in with about 30 or 40 million, like maybe for Timo Werner from Leipzig. I think the squad is good enough right now.
Brilliant stuff. Great insight. Florian Plattenhardt from Plattenberg, sorry, from Sport One. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
One transfer we didn't get to mention in that chat with Florian there. It's a really interesting insight by chatting with Hasan Salihamidžić, the sporting director at Bayern. Is Mikael Cuisance from Borussia Mönchengladbach, signed for, what, 10 million euros, I think, over the weekend, a similar time to Coutinho and Perisic. Part of the France under 20 squad, which kind of underperformed at the under 20 World Cup, but an interesting player from Borussia Mönchengladbach, a good sort of silky midfielder.
Yeah, I've seen him play for France's under 20s, and he does look a class act. Kind of one of those players who's very unhurried on the ball, can sort of from quite a deep position control the game at that level, at the under 20 level, and at times during the France's sort of relatively short World Cup, they should have done better, but were ultimately knocked out by the USA. He looked a class above a lot of his teammates, I'd have thought. The frustration for him is that he hasn't been getting enough game time at Mönchengladbach. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting move. I mean, I guess based on the comments he's been making, it's not that surprising that he's left. But the immediate thought would be, surely, of all the places, Bayern Munich is one place where he's arguably going to get even fewer opportunities, because they're, as Florian said, they're a club who are, you know, pushing for the league, pushing for Champions League at the same time. Possibly they don't have room to start blooding young players. But I think in the sort of defensive midfield role that he plays, it is one of those positions where you've got players like Xabi Martinez who are maybe coming to the end of their career, and a little bit like we said earlier about Suarez, are going to start getting a few more niggles. Maybe when they get those niggles, it takes them a little bit longer than it used to get back to full fitness. So the hope is that he is going to get a few chances. I'm sure he's not expecting this season to kind of, you know, play 30 matches or anything like that, but certainly in terms of chances to learn, there's not many better places than Bayern. The only question mark is if he'd stayed and bided his time at Mönchengladbach, would he have ended up actually getting more playing time than he will do at Bayern? But certainly he's a potentially superb player, so I'm certainly hoping that it will turn out to have been a good move.
Yeah, it's one of those ones where, was it a season too early? Because he was on the fringes of the Gladbach team last season, and on the bench a lot, got a few minutes here and there, and he's only just turned 20, like this week, I think.
Yeah.
So he's a very young chap, and perhaps he would have broken into that Gladbach team this season a little bit more and got a lot more game time, and next season might be in the time for this move. It just felt like Bayern needed young players, and he was a good young player in Germany, and because this is, it feels like the type of transfer that should happen relatively early on, because he's the type of player that they can afford, he's the type of player that they could get, that Gladbach were probably willing to sell. So if this was a first option, if you like, this should have been done in June or July, and the fact that it's happening towards the end of the window is really interesting. And I think Bayern's transfer policy is a really interesting topic that will sort of run throughout the season in one regard, because I was looking into this today and their sort of signing of sort of marquee players, at least, has really sort of ground to a halt over the last sort of three or four seasons. And since summer 2015, the only really big signings they've made up until this summer were Corin Tantalisa, who's been injured pretty much the whole time, and Mats Hummels, who's now left. And you look at the players that have left in that time, and players that have basically retired, or someone like Bastian Schweinsteiger, who obviously left for Man United, or Philipp Lahm, who retired, or Xabi Alonso, who retired, Robin and Ribery both left, Robin ended up retiring. They were sort of relying on a core of a team that Guardiola had and that Jupp Heynckes had, and that team became kind of the emotional centre of the club. And instead of evolving that that core of players that a lot of the bigger clubs do. They let them stay, and they were fantastic, and they kept winning titles, and they kept doing well in Champions League, so fair enough. But they didn't evolve, and it got to the point where all of those players were just too old, and they can't sell them, so they didn't get any money back for any of them. And they all ended up sort of slowly retiring, and now they're kind of left with less resources than they might have had to replace them had they sold them on. And a weaker squad as a result. So I'm just wondering whether there was this transfer policy that's been instigated this summer, signing younger players and signing some experienced replacements. I suppose you've got a $250 million transfer budget. Whether that is something that will continue will be really interesting to see, because I think there's a lot of work to be done there.
I think to use a weird sporting analogy, I think in a way they're a little bit like the sort of great Australian cricket team of you know, the Waughs and McGraths and Warnes, that the team picked itself for years.
Yeah.
But yeah, in the meantime, no one noticed that they were all aging together, and they've all sort of just fallen off their peak, or, you know, in the cases of Robin and Ribéry, obviously left. Neuer, I think, isn't quite as sharp as he used to be, for example.
Sure.
As you said, the only sort of obvious progression, I guess, was Lamb being replaced by Kimmich, but possibly that's not enough, and so they've had to have maybe a larger overhaul this summer than you'd expect a top team to have. You'd expect slightly more sort of natural turnover year on year. So yeah, that's why I feel that possibly more than for quite a while now, they are vulnerable, because there are a few of these players that need to bed in. Even you take Pavard and Hernandez, they're kind of marquee signings because they're World Cup winning fullbacks.
True.
But Pavard, really, I think probably most French fans at the best will in the world would say he hasn't really done enough consistently over a long period to merit sort of arguably the World Cup winners medal. But, you know, it was all the circumstances fell in his favour.
Is he a centre-back as well in a two? I don't know if he'd play in a two.
That's the thing. I'm not sure he knows really what his best position is anymore. Hernandez, I think, is a different kind of player. I think he's excellent, but he was out for pretty much the whole of last season through injury, so we're not entirely sure where he's at physically. So, yeah, I think there are a lot of question marks. And as Florian said, they are bringing in quality players, Perisic, Coutinho, but however good a player, sometimes it does take an adjustment to move to a new country, to new surroundings, and new teammates. And Bayern need to click quickly, because, you know, by the time they do, Dortmund could already be out of sight, for example.
Mm, for sure.
Good cricket analogy there, Jeremy. Mm. Topical too, of course, with the Ashes going on at the moment. This is the Get European Football Show on Love Sport. It's Serie A next.
This is Love Sport.
Love Sport, the Get European Football Show. Are you chuckling at that advert?
I was a little bit,
Jeremy.
Yeah.
Adam, sorry. I'm glad, yeah. A little impressionist there from Cal Halbert, who does the Chris Eubank and the Adam Murray and the Donald Trump impressions for Love Sport. Right, we are moving over to the San Siro, I believe, gents.
Yeah, absolutely. A really interesting season ahead for AC Milan. And here to discuss that season itself is Chloe Beresford, Italian football writer. Hi there, Chloe.
Hi.
Firstly, I'd love to get your thoughts on Marco Giampaolo coming in from Sampdoria, Gattuso out. What can we expect from AC Milan under Giampaolo?
I think he proved at Sampdoria he prefers the sort of attacking style. He plays a little slightly different formation to Gattuso in that he usually goes with a 4-2-3-1. He's done well. He's never really managed a club of AC Milan's stature, but he came through from Empoli to Sampdoria and really got a very good reputation for his style of football. And he took over from Maurizio Sarri at Empoli, and he even took Empoli higher than Sarri had done in the year before. So, you know, he comes with a very good reputation and a good background, but now is his big chance to show and prove that he can do it on a bigger stage.
You mentioned the 4-2-3-1. Is Rafael Leao going to be that one?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, obviously the window is still open, so we're waiting to see. But I think it could be very interesting to, you know, see if they can still bring in anyone else. They've been fairly quiet on the market. They've not grabbed the headlines like some of the other clubs. So, you know, we'll just have to wait and see.
What do you make of their window so far? You mentioned it's been fairly quiet, which is a little bit of a surprise. I guess there's no European football to come this season, but Patrick Cutrone is one that really shocked me going to Wolves. I always felt that he was sort of Kay's still capable of being the next great Milan striker, if you like. A big loss, and Tumio Bakayoko as well, leaving after his loan, I think. Are they two losses that are going to be covered okay?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, they've got Patrick Cutrone now, who did well in the second half of last season after bursting onto the scene with Genoa last season. And I think because of the way that Cutrone plays and the setup, there wasn't really going to be much room for Cutrone, which I think brought out mixed feelings for Milan fans, because he obviously is a homegrown talent, and it would have been a great story if he could have broken through and really nailed down that striker position at San Siro. But he just wasn't quite ready at the time when they needed him to be. And, you know, I think for him, whilst he's obviously sad to leave Milan, it'll be a good challenge for him to prove it in another league. And, you know, maybe he'll come back to Italy a better player for the experience, you know, in a few years.
Indeed, one would certainly hope so. Is there the expectation that the team they already have is one that can challenge for a Champions League? Again, you mentioned Piontek there and Lucas Paquetá as well. Two really exciting players. What can we expect from Paquetá this season? Is he expected to really assume responsibility for their attack?
I think so, yeah. I mean, he did show flashes of brilliance last season. And the thing is, because they've sort of forfeited their place in the Europa League because of the financial fair play stuff, Gianpaolo's got the advantage of he hasn't got a clogged fixture list, so he can really just focus on the league. And, you know, Milan are not going to come into the Coppa Italia until the later stages, so you know, it is his big chance to get Milan that Champions League place that they've craved for so long, because, you know, it really has been a long time coming, and a club of their size needs the income that generates apart from anything else.
They still seem a little bit sort of trigger happy in terms of their coaches. Is Champions League football a must? I mean, is his job at risk if he doesn't finish in the top four?
I wouldn't say it was necessarily at risk. I think, or sort of shall I say, hope that they will give him time. But with the squad that they have, they really should be looking at top four. And, you know, Gattuso missed out by just a point last season, and he was still relieved of his responsibilities. And that was because, I think, in a way, he'd hit a glass ceiling. I don't think he'd kind of overachieved and he'd reached the limit. But the owners of Milan are this American hedge fund, and they don't really... You have to assume that they're looking at it more from a business perspective than from a football perspective. And for a club, you know, the size of Milan, they need that revenue from the Champions League. So you've got to say that is the aim. And I think if he doesn't make it this year, I think maybe Gianpaolo will be given another season. But I wouldn't like to say definitely, because that is, it's just ruthless out there.
Brilliant stuff. Fantastic insight, as always. Chloe Beresford, Italian football writer. Thank you for joining us.
No problem.
Jez, Tumio Bakayoko, we mentioned him there. Is he a big loss? I think he did pretty well at Milan last season from what I saw, and didn't really work out at Chelsea, and was very good when Monaco won the league. But there were a lot of people in France saying that Monaco did well to get 40 million for him at the time. Is he someone that can revitalise his career, perhaps if he returns to Milan or at another European club?
There's no reason why he shouldn't. I mean, as you said, at Monaco he had a great time. It's funny, sort of following his and Doucouré's career trajectories. Mm. They both started around the same time at Rennes, and sort of one keeps kind of gradually overtaking the other in terms of where they're going. Doucouré, I think, obviously is doing very well at the moment at Watford, and Bakayoko has lost his way a little bit since that Monaco title. But by all accounts, at Milan, he started the season badly and improved as the season went on. And it's a little bit of a pity that he didn't get to sort of stay there and kind of carry on where he left off. But there's definitely a good player there. It just feels he needs to sort of lay down, lay, I can't think of the phrase, but stay in one place for a couple of seasons and really be
his
able
consistency,
to
doesn't it?
Yeah, just make it his own and be able to kind of relax at home as well as on the pitch and just get on with his business, because traveling around from year to year, it's not going to help anyone's career, I don't think. And even at Chelsea, I think he could still do a job there. Obviously, especially since they haven't been able to bring anyone in, but it doesn't look like he's going to get that many opportunities. So I hope he gets a move if need be before the window closes, because I think there is a quality player there. It's just not giving himself enough chance to really show it.
Yeah, interesting to see if he does move on just a couple of weeks now, if that before that window closes. Right, get European Football Show on Love Sport. Plenty more coming up.
Love Sport.
This is Love Sport Radio and the Get European Football Show. We've got half an hour to go, and with the guys from Get Football, Adam White and Jeremy Smith. Plenty of chat about PSG next, fellas. Ligue 1.
Absolutely, a really interesting weekend in Ligue 1. PSG, probably the headline result of the weekend, losing to Rennes. Before we get talking to Jonathan Johnson of ESPN, Jez, Camavinga, Eduardo Camavinga.
Yes.
Rennes 16-year-old midfielder. Absolutely brilliant cross for the winner for Del Castillo to head home. What do we know about 16-year-old Camavinga in midfield for Rennes?
He sort of sprung onto the scene late last season, and actually more or less stayed in the first team for the last sort of nine games or so for Rennes. They've got a very good youth setup, and quite a few of their sort of youth team gradually making their way into the first team. He is, it sounds weird to say, of a 16-year-old, but he seems well ahead of some of the others. And as I said, has become a fixture in the team. And already people have been noticing him and just looks a real quality player. But because it was against PSG, because he came up with his first assist yesterday, I think he's kind of overnight gone stratospheric and you know, almost Mbappe-like, the fuss that suddenly has been made about him over the last 36 hours or so. He's just a fantastic midfielder. For someone who's so young, he's got amazing poise, doesn't look flustered at all, doesn't fly into tackles, is comfortable on the ball, has got a good pass on him. The quote that's being bandied around a lot is from his sort of under 13 coach, which sounds like very young, but actually it's only three years ago in his case, who kind of said, you know, if we needed to hold on to a lead, we'd put him in defence. If we needed a late goal, we'd put him in attack. Obviously, I think, you know, the under 13 teams, the standout players are head and shoulders above the others anywhere they play. Mm-hmm. But it shows that he has got some versatility there. I mean, he's Angolan. He doesn't quite have French nationality yet, but apparently the FFF are sort of trying to apply pressure on whichever national authorities will give him his passport, because he absolutely looks a France international in the making.
Absolutely. To discuss what was a crazy night at Roazhon Park is Jonathan Johnson of ESPN. Hi there, Jonathan.
Hey there, guys. Thanks a lot for having me on.
No worries. PSG, what happened to them last night?
It's a good question. I mean, I guess we can ask, you know, what's happened to them really since last March, because since they won away at Manchester United in the Champions League, you know, they've not really been the same since. We've seen a number of these performances, and I mean, I have to say that the one thing that I think really does strike me when I watch PSG play and have watched them play over the last couple of months is how little intensity there is compared to the first couple of months of Thomas Tuchel's time in charge. And it really feels to me, you know, like the players are not really doing what he's asking them a lot of the time. You know, you see him gesticulating wildly at times on the touchline, you know, and it's like the players are, you know, not following his orders. And, you know, he's desperately trying to get their attention and trying to get them to buy into his methods, and is not succeeding at this moment in time.
There's been lots of talk about the players who've come in. Obviously, the much-needed midfielders, Gay and Herrera, Sarabia as well, and even Diallo in defence. But is there an argument for saying that more than those who are coming in, maybe a few more should have been shipped out and are kind of well past, I guess, the end of their cycle?
Yeah, I think there are. You know, you look in that PSG team last night, those who didn't perform particularly well, some people will trip over themselves to defend the likes of Julian Draxler, but I don't think he adds much to PSG, particularly when he's deployed in midfield. He's too often a ghostly presence in the side. I think Thomas Meunier as well, after a very good debut season, has been a big disappointment for PSG. So there's definite areas for improvement. But, you know, I think the thing that needs improving more than anything is the attitude across the board. They got a massive slice of luck in taking the lead against Rennes, and they got another huge slice of luck in that Rennes didn't grab a third, which, you know, they would not have flattered them on the night, given the way that they performed. I do think that there are a number of players in that PSG side that, could and perhaps should have been moved on. And I don't think it's really a question of ability anymore. It's a question of mentality. You know, PSG's mentality has let them down at big moments in the last couple of seasons. And I don't really think it's been adequately addressed yet. They're going the right way about it with some of the players that they've brought in. Like you mentioned, you know, bringing in players like Herrera, Gay, guys who have that real workman-like mentality that PSG have been missing from the last couple of years. But when Herrera's injured, and Gay is only just being integrated into the squad, it's a bit too early for them to start rubbing off on some of their other teammates.
Absolutely. It's a club with sort of ingrained issues, which you sort of touched on there. The mental sort of lack of mental fortitude, if you like, the cliquey nature of the team, which has been something that's been an issue since Zlatan Ibrahimovic has been around. But one thing that perhaps stood out to me yesterday is that I was sort of thinking along similar lines, that it was that sort of that mental frailty and the fact that they simply struggle to coalesce as a team, and that's something that's been the case for some time. But is it as simple as saying that there's no Neymar? Because last season the team was built so well around him, if you like. He was so central to the way PSG played, and they won 26 of the first 29 games in Ligue 1 last year. And then when he got injured, things started to drop off a little bit, and they had those three defeats. Is it as simple as saying that without Neymar they haven't got their fulcrum, and they've been so sort of trained to play with Neymar as that centre point, that they're a little bit at sea?
You know, I think it's funny you mentioned Neymar, and I talked about Tuchel earlier, because I think the two subjects tie in quite well together. Tuchel, at the beginning of his time as PSG coach, put all of his eggs in the Neymar basket. You know, he made it very clear that Neymar was going to be the star player in his team. Obviously, he didn't know how Kylian Mbappe was going to do in his debut season. He didn't know the importance that Mbappe would take on when Neymar got injured, and then Cavani got injured as well. But, you know, Mbappe has now grown into PSG's star man, yet Tuchel and the way that his vision for PSG has Neymar as the star, and obviously he hasn't had Neymar available to him in terms of being able to play him at all so far this season. And it seems like he, when you listen to him in the press conferences before each match, then after each match, he's still holding out hope that Neymar is not going to move on, that he's going to be reintegrated into the squad, because I think that Tuchel knows that he is still very much, absolutely vital to the way that he sees PSG playing and in terms of PSG's hopes of succeeding under Tuchel. Whether or not, Neymar plays a game for PSG, we're going to have to wait and see. But until Tuchel either develops another alternative formula that doesn't really include Neymar, or Neymar becomes available for PSG again, I don't think that they're going to function properly. I think that they can, given the squad that they already have, but I think that's going to require Tuchel to completely rethink his vision for PSG, and at this moment in time it doesn't appear as if he has. I'd also question PSG as to why they renewed Tuchel's contract at the time they did. You know, they waited so long after the talks over the extension of his contract to actually confirm it. And by the time they did confirm it, it seemed like a lot of the other players who weren't really in that clique with Neymar, had stopped really buying into his methods as much. And I think they're now paying for that, because those players still aren't quite buying into his methods, yet Neymar's not available. So, PSG are kind of, in a bit of free fall at the moment in terms of the squad chemistry.
PSG, this is the third time in the last nine seasons that they've lost a match in August. The other two times are the only times in the last 9 years that they haven't won the league. So Lyon obviously have started brilliantly. Rennes are on 6 points. Nice are on 6 points. Do PSG still win the league this year, or can you really see a threat from elsewhere?
Well, I don't think PSG dropping 3 points this early on, is going to be terminal to their hopes just yet. I think so much is going to depend on how the likes of Lyon perform, in terms of their consistency over the course of the season. And we all know one of the biggest problems for a lot of Ligue 1 sides, especially when they're in continental competition, is how they sort of balance themselves between Ligue 1 and the other cups that they compete in. I think there's going to be a long way to go, before we can tell whether PSG are going to be pushed for the title more closely than they were last season. But, I also think it's going to be... there need to be greater tests of the likes of Lyon's ability to challenge for the title before we say whether they're really going to be able to stop PSG from running away with it. But, if PSG don't sort out their obvious chemistry issues, I think that they will continue to drop points. It's something that we saw very often towards the end of last season. And I think we all assumed that at that time it was just sort of the after effects of that Champions League exit to Manchester United. With this Rennes result, it's now suggesting that it's not necessarily related to that, and it's something potentially deeper within the squad. So, perhaps we will have a title fight on our hands, but if we do, and I think it's a bit early to say whether we do or don't at the moment, but if we do eventually have one, it may well be because PSG have such deep-rooted issues that they perform extremely complacently, which we saw a couple of years ago when obviously, Monaco took them by surprise and ended up deservedly winning the title.
You mentioned Tuchel speaking in kind of glowing terms still about Neymar, and I thought it was interesting that this week Leonardo asked about him, was also kind of very much, he's a really good guy at heart and he's got a good heart and maybe he's just a bit misunderstood. It almost felt like he was kind of laying the ground for a possible U-turn. Gut feeling, where's Neymar going to be on the 3rd of September?
At this moment in time, it is really, really difficult to tell. And I really feel now that his hopes of making that move to Barcelona have taken a massive hit with Coutinho moving to the Bundesliga with Bayern. And I don't necessarily think that Real Madrid are going to go through with making an offer for him and trying to take him to Santiago Bernabeu. So at this moment in time, I'd say that the chances are growing day by day that we actually see him still wearing a PSG shirt. Like you said, it felt like Leonardo was laying the groundwork for a potential U-turn and him potentially being reintegrated into the squad. And at this moment in time, it does feel like there is a large chance that Neymar is going to remain at Parc des Princes by default this summer.
Brilliant stuff. Jonathan Johnson from ESPN. Great insight as always. Thanks for joining us.
All right, guys, and speak soon.
We talked a bit about at the beginning of the show about PSG, of course, and about Monaco. And sort of the third sort of big club, if you like, but after Marseille as well.
We spoke about Metz.
they're top. They are the biggest club in France. Is Lyon. And we promised our listeners a Lyon chat. 6-0 over Angers. Can they win the league?
I think they can. I mean, there's no doubt that they have the squad. PSG obviously have the best squad, but there are those ingrained problems there. The players that Lyon have got, if they all stay fit and they stay motivated all the way through that team, they've got quality players. And, we mentioned Leicester earlier, Montpellier, when they won the league in 2012. Everything kind of went in their favour in terms of other teams being off the pace, a very small squad staying fit the whole time. Lyon have got a little bit more strength and depth than that, and they've got quality players at every line. There probably will be goalkeeping issues in the future in terms of Lopez's contract, but for the moment, he's still looking good. He's still coming out with important saves. Because they've had a reasonably easy start to the season, the newly built defence is getting a bit of a chance to kind of bed themselves. Anderson looks quality, but with a couple of shaky moments, hopefully they'll sort of shake out of him once he gets to sort of full fitness. Aouar, as I said, didn't have a great season last year, but now that Fekir's gone, he knows that he can become the main man. Mm. And having seen his mate Ndombele go for 60, 70, 80 million, whatever it was in the end with bonuses, he knows that he has a good season. He can break that record for Lyon, I think. So all the way through, there's the quality and the motivation. And if they can keep it consistent, keep players like Depay motivated, PSG don't need to fall off their best level that much for Lyon to maintain a title charge. And yeah, I do think that they could be real challengers this year.
Yeah, fascinating season ahead in Ligue 1. Into the last quarter of an hour on the European Football Show on Love Sport Radio. We're going to be looking at transfers, of course, just a couple of weeks left to discuss those. And we're also taking a look at the Get Football Twitter feeds. It's the Get European Football Show on Love Sport.
This is Love Sport.
It's the Get European Football Show on Love Sport Radio with the guys from Get Football, Adam White and Jeremy Smith. Some transfer talk now and some Twitter talk as well, chaps.
Absolutely, yeah. Just a quick sort of overview of the Get Football Twitter feeds. First of all, you can follow the show at GFootballEUShow. There's various Twitter polls running over the course of the show, as has been every week so far, I think, on the topics that we've been touching to get on there and get voting on those topics. We're going to look at some transfers as well over the three main Get Football Twitter feeds, at GFFN for the French version. One player that could potentially still be part of the English transfer window is Maxime Gonon. He's a free agent, was stalwart at Lyon, went to Roma, didn't really work out, and he's been linked with Everton. Do you think that could be a move that could work out?
I'm not entirely sure where he fits there. I think he was a quality player at Lyon, lost his way a little bit with injuries as well at Roma, and I think on loan at Sevilla, was it?
Hmm.
But I mean, the last week of the transfer window, Everton were heavily linked with Doucouré, and a lot of Everton fans were wondering why, because they've already brought in a couple of midfielders. Andre Silva's there permanently now. Silva or Gomez? Ryan's gone blank. Mm. Anyway, Gbamin's come in as well. So they've got, I think, enough midfielders there. I'm not sure. Doucouré, I could see coming in because I think he's a lot more mobile. He's a bit younger. I think he could bring a lot more to the team. But Gonalon's, I'm not sure, is necessary. I suppose maybe it's hedging bets in case Gbamin is a complete flop. But I don't entirely understand the thinking there.
One from @_GIFN, the Get Italian Football News, is Mauro Balotelli officially back to Brescia. He's going to make waves in Serie A this season? I hope so. I've still really enjoyed watching him over the course of the last few years at Nice and Marseille.
I'd love him to. I think he's one of those there's players that people love to hate and hate to love, and he, I think, wavers somewhere in between. But I think probably most people have got a bit of a soft spot for him, and certainly Brescia is sort of hometown. He said today that his mum cried when he told her that he was signing for them. I think it's quite a sort of romantic move for him, and I certainly hope it works out. And and generally, his sort of modus operandi seems to be start off brilliantly and everything ends in tears. I hope it doesn't end, or positive tears, but I hope it doesn't end badly this time.
Another French sort of international that's had a very similar career to Gonalon's, actually, I sort of feel, is, although he was part of the World Cup winning team, and Gonalon would take that now, was Stephen Nsonzi. He hasn't worked. It was at Sevilla, did brilliantly Sevilla, forced his way into the team there and into the France squad, and went to Roma, and again when sort of Monchi moved, and he was sort of a Monchi signing, if you like, and he's on the verge of joining a club in Turkey. Is what's happened to his career? It seems to have sort of dropped off a little bit.
I think a lot of his career was sort of journeyman-ish, and it was just perfect timing that his sort of best career year was the one leading to the World Cup, forced his way into the squad, and even, you know, played well when given a chance. And I remember in the final, Kante had a very rare off day, and Nsonzi came in and basically shored up the midfield and the defence, and I think played actually a underrated role in France winning that match, when for a lot of the time they were outplayed by Croatia. So possibly actually all he's done is revert back to type. Or maybe because of that kind of career that he's had, and he's sort of surprisingly hit the heights of a World Cup winner's medal, maybe it's difficult for a player like him to get back to the motivation of sort of week-to-week play. But, you know, it's probably a nice payday in Turkey, and whatever happens, he'll always have his World Cup winner's medal.
For sure. Finally, one from @GGFN_, Get German Football News. Someone that's was in the Bundesliga for a long time, we've already mentioned on the show, Frank Ribery. Obviously, the end of his contract here, the last season at Bayern, having won the league again, and has been linked with a lot of clubs. He was supposedly going to be joining Monaco. That didn't happen. He was going to be going to the Middle East. That didn't happen. And now we're hearing Fiorentina is a likely possibility. Do you think he's still signed to offer? 36, I think he is now.
Yeah, I think it's hard to say he's got too much to offer. I mean, possibly in terms of the top European leagues, maybe the pace of the Italian one is the best one for him. But you know, slightly slower and a chance for him to show off his skills rather than his sort of stamina these days. But he's played less and less over the years. Obviously, he's still a quality player when he's at full fitness, but that seems to be increasingly rare. And I'm sure he can offer a lot to younger players in terms of experience, but I'm surprised that any of the sort of top four league, the top teams in the top four leagues are making a move for him.
Hmm. I think he could. I think Marseille would be the obvious one for me. Like, he's a ex-French international. That they love the ex-French internationals at Marseille, aging French players, the Champions Project. It's what that's all about. And so it just feels like that would be an obvious move, having been there before. But I don't know if that'll necessarily come off.
I think Marseille fans need something to just cheer them up and have something to cheer about, and I think and Ribéry could be that person, maybe.
Indeed. Just to round off our Twitter discussion, looking at the Get European Football Show Twitter feed, just on those Twitter polls, the first one was, after their loss to Rennes this weekend, should PSG still sell Neymar? Yes, of course, or no, they need him. Which one do you think, Jez?
I don't think they need him, but I wouldn't go so far as to say yes, of course. I do think PSG actually have played this reasonably well, and it's Neymar who's going to have to go back with his tail between his legs if Barca and Real decide that either they don't want him or they can't afford him. And as we were just saying with John, I think even Tuchel to an extent, but certainly Leonardo has tried to kind of keep the possibility. I guess it sort of circles back to the very start of the show, Zidane and Bale. If there is any possibility of coming back, you know, kind of saying to him, look, just have a decent season, keep your attitude in check, and we'll let you go a little next season or next summer for a little bit less. I think it could work out for all parties. It's, for all the criticism that he gets, and most of it is deserved, I think it would be a pity to see a player like that just sort of rotting on the bench or in the reserves for a whole year. Yeah, I don't think PSG need him. I don't think he'd be the difference between them winning Ligue 1 or the Champions League, actually. But you know, it would be a shame not to deprive everyone of being able to see him play at his full potential for a year.
For sure, especially as he's sort of in his prime, effectively age-wise at the moment. It'd be such a shame. 71% are saying yes, of course, and 29% are saying no, they need him. Interesting results there. The German...
What I would say is that I think if they get a decent amount of money and a couple of decent players for him, it's definitely worth getting rid. But it doesn't look like they're going to get that at the moment. So
especially if Coutinho moving already. Like, he would have been up front of that queue, wouldn't he, I guess?
Yeah, I think so. Semedo makes sense, I think.
You're right back.
Meunier's not going well. And I think they could make good use of all the players that have been touted at Barcelona, but clearly it's not going to happen, so...
Rakitic would be useful too, I think.
Exactly.
They need a player like him in their midfield for sure. So Dortmund winning, Leipzig winning, or Bayern winning, have we got a title race on our hands? Yes or no?
Definitely. I think last year, in the end, it felt like Bayern won it quite easily, but it took a long time for that to happen and for Dortmund to implode a little quite late in the season. I definitely think this year that I think Bayern are a little bit weaker, Dortmund are a bit stronger, Leipzig are certainly a bit stronger. Definitely a title race there.
For sure. 67% are saying yes, 33% no. Interesting stuff. I like this one. This is good from producer Tom on the Twitter. The Puskás Award nominations have been announced. So which goal was better? Messi's chip versus Betis or Adriz's overhead kick against Barcelona? That's a really tough one. I think that Messi goal in that hat-trick, one of the best hat-tricks he's ever scored, and he's scored quite a few against a number of Spanish teams, that I really feel that... I think the thing that really sums that goal up, that chip, is he's the angle which he sort of is facing the goal. He's almost sort of 45 degrees on. To chip it back across over the goal, in off the bar. I think it's Longley in the middle, who just puts his hands on his head, completely stunned. Adoritz's goal was spectacular, obviously, and brilliant and dramatic. Not much more important than Messi's goal against Betis. They're going to win that game. They won it 4-1, I think. But I'd have to say Messi's goal.
I think so. I think, I mean, Adriz clearly is a class player, but you see much lesser players than him, sort of, not flukily, but they'll try a speculative overhead shot, it comes off. I think a lot of players can do that. I don't think there's many players in the world that can do what Messi did, certainly not on purpose anyway. So, yeah, I think of the two, I think his is better.
Arguably his best ever goal, which is saying something, but an absolutely incredible goal. One thing that I wanted to round off the show, we've got 2 minutes left. It's just a brief, quick look at the week to come. So there are Champions League qualifiers this week, Europa League qualifiers. Torino Wolves, I thought, was the pick of those Europa League qualifiers. Shame those two teams have to play each other in Europa League qualifiers with neither of those teams will make the group stage. That's very disappointing. But Serie A starts next weekend. The standout fixture for me was Sampdoria-Lazio. How will Sampdoria get on with Mount Giampaolo? Coppa Italia winners Lazio, of course. Two interesting sides who will challenge for Europe. An interesting one to start. Some interesting promoter teams in Serie A as well. Lecce away to Inter, I think, is one of the later games, perhaps Sunday night. Yeah, Sunday at 7:45. Monday at 7:45, sorry. That would be a really interesting game. We mentioned Betis Barcelona there. Perhaps the pick of the La Liga games next weekend, Sunday 8 o'clock. I think that game finished 4-3 to Betis at Nou Camp last year. Really interesting
to see Fekir play against one of the teams that it looked like he could have joined.
For sure. Yeah, it'd be a really, really exciting game. Didn't get on great. They lost 2-1 their opening fixture this weekend. So interesting to see how Fekir gets on at Betis over the course of the season. And then perhaps the biggest one for me in Ligue 1 is Monaco Nîmes. Nîmes have had a terrible off season. They've lost a lot of their squad. Teddy Savenier was player of the season for me in Ligue 1 last year. He's gone to Montpellier. They've lost most of their front line and they haven't really replaced them with equal quality players. They've signed some interesting players, but if Monaco go at home and they go and lose that game, they're in real, real trouble.
They are in real, real trouble. Great way to end this week's Get European Football Show, chaps, in what was an emphatic opening, or an emphatic weekend, of course. Barca losing, PSG losing, Bayern drawing. You mentioned Serie A. What will be with Juventus? They travel to Parma at 5 p.m. next weekend. This is Get European Football Show on Love Sport Radio.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.